to Native America Calling. From Studio 869 in Isleta Pueblo, I'm Tara Gatewood. With social media accounts and the stroke of a keyboard, individuals are able to call out what they believe is bad behavior. Such accusations can shame, end careers, and create other long-standing repercussions. Many indigenous cultures have traditions for shaming in order to hold people accountable as well as correct behavior. So in this time of instant communication and so-called cancel culture, just what is fair and what is just? We'll talk about it right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. An independent watchdog for the Royal Canadian Mounted Police found that the force racially discriminated against the mother of an Indigenous man who was killed in 2016. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the 22-year-old was killed by a white farmer in Saskatchewan.
The incident took place during the summer of 2016. Colton Bushy was shot and killed when an SUV he was riding in traveled onto the property of Gerald Stanley near Bigger, Saskatchewan. Stanley was charged with second-degree murder. He was acquitted by a jury in 2018. He had testified that he fired warning shots, and that his gun just went off. An independent review found RCMP officers acted hurtfully when they informed Bushy's mother, Debbie Baptiste, of his death. When she had broke down in tears, they told her to get it together and questioned whether she had been drinking. They smelled her breath and searched her home. The Complaints Commission said on a second occasion they inappropriately visited Bushy's wake to update his mother on the case. Perry Belgar, the National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations, says the ruling by the Complaints Commission brought a sense of vindication for Debbie Baptiste.
She did say she experienced racism and discrimination, and nobody would believe her. The RCMP dismissed it, but this independent oversight body proved it. They treated her with racism and discrimination, and she persevered through that. And now that we know that, the big question is, how do we fix it?
The RCMP has implemented almost all of the recommendations that stemmed from the reviews. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said the way the Bushy family was treated was unacceptable. And the lawyer for the mother, Debbie Baptiste, says systemic racism underlines the entire case. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The president and CEO of Indian Collective, Nick Tilson, says charges against him and others will be dropped, stemming from arrests during a July 2020 land back action in South Dakota protesting Trump's visit to Mount Rushmore. In a press release, Tilson said it's a victory for land defenders and comes after months of political pressure from grassroots groups and media coverage of the case. On July 3rd, Indigenous people, including Tilson and their allies, blocked a road where they were met with militarized force and clashed. Some were pepper sprayed and a police shield was taken, spray painted with the words "land back" before it was returned. Tilson was accused of taking the shield, facing felony and lesser charges with up to 17 years in prison. The Rapid City Journal reports charges against Tilson and 19 others will be dropped if he completes a diversion program. A Native American health official is challenging an opinion claiming the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine should not be taken by Native Americans. Steve Jackson reports.
The opinion was featured in Indian Country Today by Dr. Bruce L. Davidson. It claimed the effectiveness of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is lower for Native Americans and Alaskan Natives. Davidson said there was conclusive evidence to indicate a lack of protection 28 days after a dose was administered to members of those populations. He recommends those groups stick with the two-dose vaccines. Abigail Echohawk, the executive vice president of the Seattle Indian Health Board, described that as complete misinformation.
And I'm here today to say that that information is untrue. The science of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine shows that the efficacy is across all races and ethnicities. There are no findings within that study that showed that any race or ethnic group did not benefit from that vaccine.
Echohawk is urging Native Americans to reach out to trusted sources of information like the state or local health departments or the Urban Indian Health Institute for more accurate information on COVID vaccines. There are 29 federally recognized Native American tribes in Washington state. For National Native News, I'm Steve Jackson reporting from Spokane.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center, dedicated to cancer research, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous population. A no-charge online risk assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme. Kawanak Broadcast Corporation is looking for an enthusiastic and creative person to manage our social media and website content, information, and application for the digital producer job at nativenews.net under employment.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, joining you live from my homelands of Shiriwit-Tui. What's the correct way to address bad behavior in Native communities? Is it Instagram, Facebook, TikTok? You tell us. In seconds, people can publicly point out on social media what they think are someone else's wrongdoings. It can have a life-changing consequence. At the same time, public discussions about what is acceptable are changing. When public officials and corruption fail to act, or corporations fail to act, social media is an important component in pointing out decisions that don't stand the test of time. The conversation is still playing out over which historical figures deserve to be remembered with public monuments. Many tribes have their own traditions for dealing with bad behavior from their citizens. Coming up this hour, we're going to hear about those traditions and how they intersect with today's instant public praise or condemning. And we want to hear from you, too. Join our conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And with us today on the line is Adrienne Jawert. And she is a Two-Spirit journalist, fiction writer, and research policy analyst. And lobbyist for Indigenous Vote in Montana. And she is Northern Cheyenne. Our pleasure to have her here. Adrienne, welcome to Native America Calling.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. I just kind of like was informed of these questions a few minutes ago. So if I say something that gets me canceled, you know. No.
You know what, though, Adrienne? That's kind of how it works, right? You say something wrong, something you say is taken in the wrong way, and then you're canceled. And so let's start there. Adrienne, for you, what do you think about what happens when what we just described happens on social media? What are some of the legs on this spider?
Everything becomes viewed in a bad way. Criticism, you know, it becomes like, oh, I'm just critiquing them. Oh, they deserve to be criticized. But then it just kind of turns snowballs into abuse where people like get hyped up on this and more people. It's like I saw this one saying, it's like finally there's like an avalanche of criticism or quote criticism that just turns into abuse. It's like, and some people really can't distinguish that. It becomes a mob mentality of, you know, it's like I see this one guy who said, there's a group of people like who can't distinguish between criticism and abuse. And those people are called abusers, you know. And even the people that with legit critiques, you know, they kind of get thrown into that, the snowstorm, whatever. It's like, so the snowstorm never feels guilty for the avalanche that happens to this person that just like is getting abused. And that's like I'm saying with I'm just trying to from an empathetic point of view for people that have been canceled on, you know, that probably, you know, said something that wasn't that bad. I mean, it probably was bad, whatever. They probably want to be sincere and were sincere, but after a point, it just becomes like bad faith criticism, and everything they're going to do after that is viewed from a bad, from a lens of, oh, you can't be redeemed, whatever. So,
And Adrian, what do you think is the difference between, and you said criticism or maybe critique versus abuse? How do you spot the two?
I guess probably use specific examples and stuff. let's see. Well, criticism is like, you take apart what they say and just like without constructive critique, you know, we could call it that, I guess. If I was in a treatment place, and what we do is we don't sit there and say what you did is bad, but just kind of pick apart what they did so they help, you know, help them learn from it, help them acknowledge it and see what they're doing. But if you like just sit there and bombast them and preach at them and just like yell at them, I mean, maybe sometimes they do this or that just to get it to their head, but at the same time, it's people throw up a wall of defense and, you know, or just become hurt by it. There's an analogy I heard. It's like the difference between it is like, okay, and it was just like this one trans woman of ContraPoints was being canceled like last year, year and a half ago. And then it would just be, the abuse became so whatever intense. It was like every time it just like divided the trans community and divided the leftist progressive community, if you were for her or against her. And I was for her, and you know, and I still had my criticisms against like, well, maybe they could have phrased that better or whatever. But after a while, it just became like this whole, I don't know, anyone who even associated with their, liked their post, they were going to get canceled too. And it was just like constant abuse of a, and someone else put it pretty, I liked their analogy they used. It was like, you know, you come in on, like, say someone's cooking food, you know, the wife cooks food, you know, and they burned it, you know, and their husband just like berating them and abusing them, is like screaming at them. And it's like, yeah. Burning the food sucks, you know, it makes the house smell or whatever. But what's your, and you see this person just constantly, you know, what's your reaction going to be? Are you going to jump in and say, hey, take it easy? You know, yeah, burning food sucks, but, you know, take it easy. Or just join in, say, or, you know, not even like, consider the other person's feelings or whatever, just like lambasting them after they've been abused and have a black eye and stuff. And yeah, what's your best option is to start, you know, laying it on them too. Yeah. And
it can get really dark, and it can get really dark really fast. And Adrian, another dark side of this is when it becomes entertainment. And talk to me a little bit about that of, you know, when this becomes entertainment, and what does that reveal?
Well, let's see. Let's see, when we start doing, you know, cancel culture was like, what do we used to call it? Call out culture, I guess, back in the day, which is a few years ago, which is forever in internet time. But, you know, it was just like, kind of this thing was like, we have to, you know, if enough people on Twitter and stuff say something about this person, they're going to have to address the elephant in the room. And then it became like a tool for power, or, you know, power to the people, whatever, the regular people who didn't have a voice. And, you know, and it kind of worked to an extent to the Me Too movement and everything. But like any shaming human, social media shaming for humans being fallible creatures, but we, humanity itself being fallible. So what it does is turn into, you know, like I said, the public abuse, the mob mentality. The public, I always reminded the old school public stocks, you know, where they do rotten tomatoes at people and cabbage or whatever. Not the good kind of stocks, like, no. But, yeah, is the public shaming. You do get to endorse, I mean, like in psychology, I mean, you read studies, people get these endorphins off abusing people because it makes you feel better about yourself and stuff. It's like, well, I mean, it's like, it's like cancel culture is like a new thing, but just imagine when kids were bullied when they were when you were in school, you saw people bullied. If you ever, you know, could admit it and you joined in on them, you felt better about yourself, whatever. And you know, and I cringe at myself when I was like making fun of people back then and stuff, and even made like, "Hey, sorry about that." You know, if I saw a person like years later, sorry about what?
And getting to that side of realizing you're doing something wrong and making that turn, I think that's interesting too. So there's a lot of tears when we talk about this, both, I guess, physically sometimes and, you know, figuratively. And a lot of this stuff is happening on social media. And on social media, you're not face-to-face necessarily with a person. Looking at them, breathing the same air, hearing their voice in real time. What do you think that does in all of this, Adrian, and the fact that a lot of times this is done on social media at a distance and you never see the person?
Yeah, that's, I want to like go back to the instance of the ContraPoints controversy. it was like, you always noticed there were always people on Twitter, you know, there's just like, they're all, you know, cartoon pics and stuff and, you know, anonymous names, and they have a freedom to say what they want and say what they will. And that was like, kind of a whole point. Part of my journalism or whatever was always like reading, there's like, oh yeah, people are just making comments. Oh, they're just trolls, whatever. And they never like took that seriously, but I was, I mean, especially if they're from anonymous people, but I mean, yeah, I mean, just living in Montana, whatever, you'd always see these really like obvious big Facebook troll profile making the transphobic, ignorant comment, whatever. But, you know, you just say, oh, that's just a troll, whatever. But that thing has like 30 likes, and this is Montana, and we're not that big. And there's like, they're speaking for a lot of people and stuff, but, and now, you know, next thing you know, they're trying to, like, cancel trans people in Montana. So it all builds up. I'm not sure if that's related, but...
you know, but. And we'll toss that to our listeners, too, about this space, you know, not being face-to-face, where you see the whites of a person's eyes, or you are also minus of the emotions that happen when something is said. Pretty interesting. I know you're thinking something about all of this. We'll get deeper into it coming up after the break. But you are also invited into the conversation. Go ahead and dial in, share your thoughts. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And you can ask your questions too. We're ready. Go ahead, dial in. The Navajo Nation says its vaccination rate is almost double the country as a whole. But despite successful vaccine rollouts by many tribes, some Native people living in urban areas are finding access to the vaccine challenging. We'll learn about the range of vaccine availability for Natives on the next Native America Calling.
If you're hurting in your relationship or have been affected by sexual violence, Strong Hearts Native Helpline is a no-charge, 24/7, confidential and anonymous domestic, dating, and sexual violence helpline for Native Americans. Help is available by calling 1-844-762-8483 or by clicking on the Chat Now icon on strongheartshelpline.org. This program is supported by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and we are talking about calling out, correcting bad behavior, especially in the age of social media. Some might call it cancel culture. And do you think this is an effective way of guiding someone towards accountability? Join our conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And out of Billings, Montana today is Adrienne Jawert. She is a Two-Spirit journalist, fiction writer, and research and policy analyst, and lobbyist for Indigenous Vote in Montana. And she is Northern Cheyenne. Adrienne, thank you for being with us today. And we put a lot on the table in that first segment. And so I just want to give you a moment. If anything else came to mind, about trying to explain, you know, what exactly all this is about and what it leads to. Anything you want to add?
Yeah, what you could see how it all kind of builds up, whatever. But you said something about not reaching people on a humanity face-to-face level, you know, seeing people as humans, a fellow humans, that in anonymity just kind of masks that, where, you know, you don't have to look them in the eyes and say this mean thing to them or whatever. And that was like something that reminded me of Deborah Juarez, a Seattle city councilwoman, one of the first Native American Seattle Native city councilwoman. It was like, agree with it or not, it was like, okay, we're going to cut the Seattle, defund the police by 50% in Seattle. And she refused to sign that pledge because there was no concrete plan behind it. And she's very, very nuanced thinker, very technical and very lawyerly. And it's like, okay, yeah, I agree that things need to be a lot of, but we can't just, you know, and of course they're just like she got canceled, like not only online, but it was just like people just started showing up at her house. 50-100 people just showing up in the house in the middle of the night with their car lights parked at a honking horns and, you know, doing protests, BLM protests, or it wasn't even about, you know, BLM anymore. It was just like these people just coming every night just to harass them and intimidate them. And that's what she said. He's like, you know, these people don't see me as a human. They don't see that I, you know, did all this, you know, help Native people. It's like you're saying BIPOC or whatever, but what about the I in the BIPOC? You shouldn't even say BIPOC people. And you just heard the pain in her voice. She just wanted to help, you know, but it was so frustrating to them that they didn't see her as a person anymore. So just like some person that needed to be canceled and called out. And
And this happens a lot. You know, I got two more folks who are on the line with us today. But if you have any thoughts about all of this, those words, cancel culture, have they resonated with you? Have you taken a look at this issue? Go ahead and give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Here with us today out of Portland, Oregon as well is Jalene Joseph. She is Executive Director of the Native Wellness Institute, and she is Aani. And it is our pleasure to have her here. Jalene, thank you for joining us for another Native America Calling. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Happy to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Thank you. And also joining us from the Blackfeet Reservation in Montana is Theda Newbrest, and she is a master trainer and facilitator for the Native Wellness Institute and a board member of the Sovereign Bodies Institute, and she is Blackfeet. Theda, it's a pleasure to have you with us today as well. Welcome.
Okie, Sinadapi. This is wonderful. Glad that everyone's here.
Well, ladies, Adrian has definitely taken us to a good place to kind of get our heads around this. And just when we talk about calling out somebody, canceling somebody, deplatforming people, what are your thoughts about this and what are some of the things you witness? Go ahead, Jalene, start us off.
Sure. Well, I think it's interesting, you know, when Native America Calling reached out to us, and then I kind of reached out to some people who I thought would be really good on this show, and some of the people said, I don't want to go on there and talk about cancel culture. I don't want to be canceled. So it's like, it's real, right? Like, it happens. We see it happen, you know, almost on a daily on social media. And for me, you know, I really wanted to come on here because I wanted to come and share through a trauma and healing lens. And I think when, you know, that's part of the work that we do is we help our people to connect the dots between trauma and behavior. And so, for example, you know, some of the lasting impacts of trauma is like chronic negativity. Another lasting impact of trauma is drama, like being addicted to drama, right? Another lasting impact of trauma is like, you know, the need to be right. So those are examples that we can see play out with cancel culture, where it provides drama in our life, right? To do it, and it also provides drama, like to be a part of it. You know, whether it's the mob mentality or jumping on social media with comments or, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And so sometimes we just need to pause, right? And like, and take a look at that. Like, am I coming from a place of trauma, or am I coming from a place of, you know, compassion and really wanting to change behavior?
Thank you for that. And Theta, any initial comments?
I would say wait, listen, pause, pray before you react. I just, you know, from our culture, you know, thousands of years before there was any outsiders that came to visit us from European countries, that we had etiquette, we had protocols, we had ceremonies, we had songs, we had aunties and uncles, and your grandma and grandpa, you behaved around them. And so I was, sometimes if someone misbehaved, and you know that one auntie that she comes in the room and you sit up straight. When someone misbehaves, I look at them and I say a prayer that I wish their aunties and uncles and their grandmas would come and be a safety net around them. You know, it's just like I was driving down here and someone cut me off in a snowstorm. And with this pandemic, what I've relearned is our culture and our prayers are our shield. And rather than, you know, getting mad at that person or, you know, and that's an example, someone that reacts, they haven't done their healing. So I just started praying for that person in their car. And I didn't know their race. I couldn't tell. I just started saying, you know, I hope that the next seven generations of your descendants have joy. The next seven generation of your descendants see all of the grandchildren grow in a new world where racism has evaporated. I just started saying a prayer. And so, and you know, Kara, Jelena, you know, it's criticism hardens and kindness softens.
And Theta, go ahead, continue.
Yeah, I just you know, operate, especially now, I'm patient because I know people have had grief and loss. I know they've been abused because of their gender identification. I know that they, you know, they maybe can't pay the mortgage, maybe can't, you know, get proper food on the table. I know that their kids just threw out their tablets out the window because they don't want to Zoom anymore. I know that. So why can't we be more gentle? Why can't we be more kind? And, you know, like all my little relatives, I tell them, you know, I said, yeah, you're TikTok and you're Instagram, but your future employer is going to look you up and it's going to be there forever. So you better start looking at if you want a job in the future and how you present yourself.
And that's what I wanted to jump into. When we talk a lot about this, it's happening on social media. And that creates a different kind of environment where, again, you're at a distance often. Jelena, any thoughts on that too?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely puts a different spin on everything because you can be sitting in your car or sitting in your own home and, you know, blasting out all of this stuff and no one says anything back unless it's on social media. So people see it as a safety, you know. So that's just, you know, it's just an interesting part of it. But I think another piece is, you know, back to understanding trauma and healing is, you know, a lot of our people, because of that chronic negativity, we have just these tapes that play in our head that our negative self-talk about ourselves, and then that spills over to negative thoughts about other people, right? And even earlier, Adrian was talking a little bit about that. And what it does is that negative self-talk, like, takes the place where positive self-talk could be, where kindness and compassion and empathy, you know, could be. And so we just get on this negative bandwagon of wanting to tear someone down without even putting ourselves in that person's shoe. And when we think back to traditionally, how did we do behavior management, you know, whether it was the public shaming, some people might call it was still done from a place of love. Like, the behavior management, the correction of the behavior was done because they loved us and they cared about us and they wanted us to be a better human being, right? And even earlier, I was sharing how, you know, one of our board members, she sings this, Lavina, she sings this song, and it's called the Turnaround Song. Like, literally, you know, we had songs to help us turn around to be a better person. Or in another community I went to, and they sing this song that it's called Tomorrow. And literally the words are talking about, how can I be a better person tomorrow than I was today? You know, so it was just done in a very different way, with love and kindness and humility and respect, you know, for the person. And we don't really... We don't really see that in today's call-out culture. It's about, you know, there's an element of attention-seeking behavior in there, right? And to get attention in a really negative way, and it has like major impacts. We help people all the time. People are calling us individually. We go into communities and help people, but there's people that have reached out that have been on the receiving end of cancel culture, and it has caused depression and anxiety. And there's lots of our people, there's lots of Native people who are social media influencers who have high anxiety because of what they write or what they don't write. You know, the people call silence is violence. If they don't say anything about a certain thing, they spend hours and hours and hours contemplating even writing one sentence because the fear of being called out and canceled.
And Jalene, sometimes when things like this happen, is because of certain behaviors. And I want to get your take. Sometimes when people side with a certain person, then they get called out. Sometimes it's about serious things like sexual harassment, sexual violence. What are your thoughts on when it comes to what is being called out on social media? Anything you want to add about that? And, you know, are some of these behaviors things that really need to be called out on social media?
Yeah, I mean, I think about that a lot because, like, you know, we hear from a lot of people about all kinds of situations, you know, like that, right? We have to pause and take a look at how is this working? Like, how is this working for us, right? How is using social media to call out someone, does that help address the situation? So we have to pause and then do some reflection, right? And then really think about, you know, what is the behavior that I want changed? And so and we see that a lot. So to me, it's like social media is this huge machine, right? And definitely it can create results, right? Like we see that a lot, you know, like don't go to that business or don't support that person or whatever. So I think it's just a case-by-case situation, and we have to really look at what is the end result, what is my part in it, and how is this working? Is there call-out culture is one way? Is there a different way, you know, to handle this that might even come from a place of compassion and understanding?
Thanks, Jalene. You know, anything you want to add? Go ahead, give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. Jalene, did you have something more? Go ahead.
Oh, no, I just wanted to say that, you know, when I go through life, like, I always try to have my trauma and healing lens on. So even the person that is being called out, like, their behavior, whether it's, you know, sexualizing or objectifying women or abusing women or whatever, their behavior is coming from some place. And it doesn't mean that we have to excuse it, but it explains their behavior, right? So I think for me, that's where, you know, I try to come from a place of compassion and understanding.
Thanks, Jalene. Theta, anything to add?
I would thank you, Jalene. You know, her and I work together, and we sit in many Zoom talking circles now and Zoom healing. I think that a lot of having the healing happen, like seeing why the hurt people hurt people, and looking at their wounds. And we do a lot. I worked, you know, for 4 decades with women who have intimate partner abuse, women who have been abused. And it's really having them go through the steps of forgiveness And like Jalene said, you know, really the tapes in their heads, like, you know, if they think, you know, all men are bad, you have to replace them with showing them the good men that have their sons. Sometimes, you know, the sons get the brunt of that wound, you know, that there are men who grow from boys to men with the rites of passage and with their culture, that spiritual maturity comes. And then for them, often, you know, we recreate ceremony for them because they might not have their Indian name. They might not have had a ceremony when they had their first child. They might not had a ceremony for a wedding or a divorce or any of those rites of passage. And so what's cool about it is we recreate the ceremony and we bring our ancestors' teaching into it, just like Jalene said, just like Levina's song. And it's like those are the safety nets. They're spiritual safety nets for Indian people just to be their true self. And, you know, we just got to be transparent. I mean, I really like that tribal councils now are, you know, when they get elected, they go to treatment, you know, and they to resolve their childhood issues before they become a leader, that you call people out in a different way. You know,
And even some of these traditional ways I want to get into as well coming up after the break. But again, if you just tuned in today, we are taking a look when people call people out. Some people use the term cancel culture, and we want to hear your thoughts on this. And what do you think when a lot of this happens on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok? What happens? What escalates? What gets solved, if anything? Give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And again, you can ask questions too if you have more thoughts on this. Dial in now. Phone lines are open.
Did you know COVID financial relief in the form of forgivable PPP loans is available to small business owners and independent contractors, including artists? DreamSpring has worked with New Mexicans looking to open or expand their business for over 25 years, and now they're helping provide PPP loans. Information, including how to qualify, at dreamspring.org. That's dreamspring.org. DreamSpring supports this program.
Thanks for tuning in to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, and we are talking about holding people accountable, calling them out on what people believe is bad behavior. If you have anything you want to add, give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. With us today on these Native airwaves, we have Jalene Joseph, Executive Director of the Native Wellness Institute. Also here is Theda Newbrest, a Master Trainer and Facilitator, also with the Native Wellness Institute and a board member of the Sovereign Bodies Institute. Thank you both for being here. Also on the line out of Billings, Montana, is Adrienne Jaward, and she is a Two-Spirit journalist, fiction writer, and research and policy analyst. And lobbyists for Indigenous Vote in Montana, and they are Northern Cheyenne. Thank you for joining us today, Adrienne. And so, you know, thinking about all this and, you know, traditional ways of doing this, Theda, I want to turn to you. Growing up, when people wanted to call people out, where did it happen? How did it happen?
You know, for decades, thousands of years, there was a process called Agakstamon, and it was a decision-making process, and it's circle justice, and it can still be used, and it is used today, where, you know, you're in a circle, you've got your higher society people, you've got a smudge, you know, men are on one side, women on the other side, and then, you know, we're really honoring a lot of our LGBTQ spirit, transgender, and so they can choose where they want to sit. So there isn't just like, you know, the male. And the behavior is talked about, whatever the behavior is. And I imagine as we go, you know, maybe if someone's been really negative on TikTok or Instagram, you know, or they've been bullying, we would call it cyberbullying because we've had suicides because of cyberbullying. Say we called that behavior out. Then the person gets to explain, and then everyone prays. The grandmas pray, the grandpas pray, the uncles pray, the aunties pray, and they say a prayer, and then then they say, okay, how are we going to resolve this? What's the solution and the resolution? And then they discuss it, and the person who did the behavior gets to contribute on what the resolution is. Like, we've done it with some young people, you know, where they've done something bad, you know, and it might be on social media or others. And then, so then they have to go and paint all the elders' buildings. They have to go and start community gardens for the elders. They have to, the solution is cultural. It's, you know, we got to uncolonize. We got to, you know, it's about taking the softness, the spiritual growth within our cultures. And, you know, for our young people, just help them grow to become to who they want to be and never judge it. Never judge it. I'm just so glad Adrian's on here. It's just really good to hear his voice and Jalene, you know. But those traditional ways, they're not gone. They're just asleep. So just wake up and be Indian again. Be Indigenous again.
Thanks for that, Theda. You know what? Let's hear from our listening audience. Again, if you want to join us, give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. And actually, we had a caller who left a comment saying there's a concept of calling in rather than calling out, which is more productive and positive than public shaming. What are your thoughts? Adam, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Adrian, just hearing some of these concepts and thought processes that both Jalene and Theda are giving to us today, what are your thoughts about how things play out on social media? You know, do you think some of this thought is put into it, or is it something different?
I think there's a what we're evolving into, and it's almost becoming like a caricature that, sadly to say, on social media and stuff, is like we become obsessed with these woke leftist purity test, you know, of like piety, where we're just where there's like people constantly looking to judge each other for stepping out of line, whatever, and people are like terrified of getting canceled and stuff. And me as like a artistic writer person, I mean, that art is my safe space and stuff, and so I'm always gonna like, well, what if someone, I mean, for me myself, it's like I say it in the artistic community a lot, the writing community, if someone like explores something in depth, that something that might offend people but might challenge thinking and stuff, and they're getting, like, might get canceled for it or something. I mean, just for daring to go there. So it really inhibits a lot of creativity. I mean, not to say creativity is being an excuse for, like, whatever, bigotry or or racism, et cetera, et cetera. But, like, for instance, but there's, like, a trend of people, like, dredging up things from, like, 10 years ago. There's a gallows basically fired from her Teen Vogue issue or Teen Vogue editor position for something she said, and it was like absolutely wrong timing, and what she said was wrong or whatever, but it was like tweets against the Asian community 10 years ago, and then of course there's like a big massacre of Asian people, and that just came back like that was like a absolute bad timing. But at the same time, you see people had empathy for them because they realized 10 years ago how woke was I about, let's say, here's a comparison I like to use. How woke were you about trans people 10 years ago, you know? Probably not that woke because there wasn't a lot of education. I'm sure there's people said ignorant jokes about Caitlyn Jenner or something that they regret, like, but have that, some people are like terrified of having something dug up from their past, whereas at the same time, you know, we can all adopt and grow, we all can be sincere and stuff. And in the Northern Cheyenne or Cheyenne belief system, and that was like something that was really really emphasized was forgiveness, and you know, we were very known as we became a warrior tribe, but we were known as the peace tribe. We're very fair and stuff. Even after Sand Creek happened, when with brutal massacres just on various levels, just the brutality of it, the chief black kettle was like, he's known as the peace chief, like still wanted peace with the whites. He still wanted to make it work. He's like, okay, it was just those bad people, those white people, not all white people are bad. Hashtag not all white people, but at the same time, yeah, that just led to his almost to a point where, you know, where they had another massacre where he then died, you know, unfortunately. But yeah, we always like believed in fairness and forgiveness and stuff. But at the same time, our Cheyenne tribe is because we had this belief system. It was such an, there was something absolute about it. If you killed another Cheyenne, you were like literally canceled from the tribe. It's like, you're ostracized, you're out of here. But that became like the biggest detriment of, yeah, you don't murder someone within your tribe. But we didn't need jails back then, you know, to keep people in line. It was just our inherent belief system. You just don't hurt people within your tribe or whatever. So it, or, you know, so yeah, mm-hmm. It was like one of our best chiefs, a Little Wolf, that led us to Montana. Years later, he was drunk and killed another tribal member. And even the Cheyennes were like, you were drunk, that wasn't you. But he's like, no, that's the rule. I'm going to, you know, he just isolated himself and lived out in the outskirts of, which is like the sad ending to one of our greatest chiefs ever. But it was like, yeah, he canceled himself. So anyways.
And Adrian, you know, when you think of these things and what people are bringing to attention, putting out there on social media, what do you think if it is a decade ago, 5 decades ago, what do you think about that?
Well, it's like they said, the internet is forever. I mean, but I guess I could scrub all my tweets from. There's a system where I could scrub all my tweets from whatever years ago. But some of them, yeah, I could look at some of my, like, you know, you get those Facebook memories. You look at that tweet, just like cringe looking at it now. God, why am I tweeting all these dumb song lyrics? But or why am I invited at least Facebook's song lyrics for a band I didn't even like now, but yeah, it just, that's like a fairly, you know, something that's people are becoming more aware of. I mean, when you read things like that Teen Vogue gal in particular and stuff of a, but there's something as that this there was a gal who I don't want to say their name, but a Native American activist, whatever, within Montana community, and they posted something that was like based off a really, really transphobic person tweet, and they put it on their Facebook and said, "Oh, like, I agree with this." And then, you know, it was like a bunch of people. There was been like 30 comments of other activists who were like, "This is transphobic. You shouldn't put this on here." I mean, but, you know, biology and trans women, and but it's like, no, this is coming from a bad spot. This, you could look at this woman's Twitter feed that you got this from, and it's like nothing but anti-trans stuff all the way through. And it was just like, yeah, you shouldn't be sharing that because, you know, that it opens a gateway to a more and more, you know, two-spirit phobia and stuff, whatever. But, you know, they eventually deleted the tweet and whatever, but... And I was one of the people that called them out, but I didn't want to do it and like get a bad faith critique and round up the mom and all the trans two-spirit folks. I mean, I suppose I could. I just wanted them to, I knew, realized they were a young person. They could learn from that experience and they could, you know. But the irony is they unfriended me for probably, I didn't think I was that harsh with them, but it was just like pretty pointed. Person when I write, you know, I mean, I'll say the exact same thing as I'm talking about now, but it, for some reason it comes across as more pointed when I write it. But yeah.
And Adrian, something I do want to get in here too is just thinking about how you respond, whether, you know, you make a comment or whether you decide to not. And even both of those things, they both send a message. And Jalene, when you are making that decision, to respond or to not respond, you know, what do you think should be some of the thought process when we see these kind of things kind of unfolding and taking a life of their own, and then it kind of turns into team sports? What side are you on? Any thoughts about considering how you respond or not respond?
Yeah, for sure. I think in any situation when we have an immediate reaction, you know, an immediate anger, you know, our hands get sweaty, we, you know, whatever, like that's a sign just to pause, right? And to take some time to think so we can respond instead of react, right? Like that's the first thing. And the other thing we have to be mindful of is, you know, we've all been in a pandemic now for, we're going into year two of being in a pandemic. So everything is heightened, right? People's stress is heightened. People's anxiety is heightened. People's worries and fears and all of that are heightened. And so when we understand trauma, I know I keep going back to that, but, you know, and already traumatized people are being re-traumatized in this pandemic. So I know call-out culture just hasn't been during the pandemic. It's been pre-pandemic as well. But everything is heightened in this pandemic. So we just need to pause, like sleep on it before you post that post, or pray about it before you post that post and, you know, and jump in there. So that's one solution, is like just to pause.
Angeline, what about considering the person who's doing the calling out? What are your thoughts? How do you know if this isn't just something vicious and vindictive?
Yeah, that's, you know, it's interesting. Today, I'm actually, we have these things that we do every day called our power hours. And today I'm doing a power hour on discernment, forgiveness, and self-regulation, which is really, those are all good tools for like getting involved or not in this whole call-out culture. So, you know, one of the big areas that I see the call-out culture is what I call the identity police, right? And people taking that role on themselves to do that. One of the things that I really thought about before I got on social media was that I am getting on social media, yes, to stay connected to people, but I'm also getting on social media to bring positivity. So I always keep that in mind. And so I don't like to read negativity, right? And I see it a lot. Toxicity, as you know, some people call it. I get on social media to put positive things on there because I know positivity is one way to mitigate like chronic negativity, right? And our people need and deserve to see that, just like we deserve to be happy and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And so I always look at things again through my trauma and healing lens. And so when we do that, we can have the discernment and we can see like, oh, you can tell this person is hurt and they just want to get revenge. So when we don't have forgiveness, you know, it often leads to that place of, you know, getting revenge, or, you know, the anger just keeps growing and growing, you know, into rage as an example. So it's always about using discernment, you know, being able to use our ability to judge situations before we jump to conclusions or, you know, things like that. Because when we do that, we could potentially be causing more harm. And as Sita said, there have been people in our communities that have taken their own lives because of things that have happened on social media.
And that is just, you know, that's tragic. And just thinking about how some of these things can lead to that is the importance of why we need to have conversations of all about all of this. And Theta, we got less than a minute. Any final comments you want to leave us with?
I was, and I guess it's humor, you know, I get in Facebook jail all the time. And when I get in jail, it's used because I try to post positive, productive, and proactive. But if I have a button on that says end white supremacy, or if I use any, you know, that anyway, or I share, you know, when a woman's been brutalized, I get in Facebook jail. So what I just started doing in a way is I'm teaching the language. So I just say it in the language, and because I realize Facebook can't speak Blackfoot.
You know how we maintain on Facebook and social media, all social media platforms, I think is worthy of another discussion, just talking about our activities on social media. We do have to wrap things up. Thank you both for being here with us, Jalene Joseph, Theta Newbress. Also, thank you to Adrian Jawart. Join us tomorrow for a discussion about COVID-19 vaccine distribution. I'm Tara Gatewood.
Support by Amerind, Indian Country's 100% tribally owned insurance partner. Amerind works with tribal governments and their business enterprises to provide effective commercial insurance coverage, strengthen Native American communities, protect tribal sovereignty, and help keep dollars in Indian Country. More information on property, liability, workers' compensation, and commercial auto solutions at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.